By 10 o'clock Eastern Time on Tuesday, it was apparent that President Eisenhower had been re-elected President of the United States, and by 11, we all knew it was a clear landslide. There was no farm revolt, apparently, and the cities, which were usually Democratic, were voting Republican in huge numbers. And even while the returns were still coming in, experts in such matters were seeking to analyze just what happened and why. Here now is an answer to some of the questions. Monitor goes to Dean Maurice F. X. Donahue at the University of Chicago.
With me this morning at the New World microphone, Mr. T. George Harris, Bureau Manager for Time Incorporated in the Middle West, and Professor Brainerd Curry of the University of Chicago Law School. We discuss the implications of the national election that was held 5 days ago. Perhaps we might, gentlemen, begin by trying to see not only what happened on Tuesday, but what we can expect in the national political scene in the next 2 years and the next 4 years. Mr. Harris, what's your view?
Well, I think that what happens now that we have the Eisenhower administration confirmed in the executive department and the Democrats, in effect, confirmed in the legislative side, is that we have a period of 4 years in which the main question continues to be whether the Republican Party can become a serious, effective party on a national level, including certain changes in its conduct in Congress.
Now, from that, you argue that because of the Republican failure to capture either the House or the Senate, that they are not an effective party when they have won the top office by some 10 million votes or more.
I would say that on certainly on the legislative level, the Republicans, by losing their positions and losing the opportunities they had in the Eisenhower landslide to capture control of Congress, the Republicans have proved that they lack the general confidence of people in their individuals who would be representing them had they followed along. If they'd really gone on Eisenhower's coattails, they would have control of Congress. This means people don't have that confidence in the Republican leadership throughout the state.
And Mr. Curry, do you agree?
Seems to me there are major problems in the future of both parties. On the side of the Republican Party, there's the question whether the party can find a substitute for the personal leadership of President Eisenhower, who, of course, will not be able to succeed himself at the end of this term.
Under a new constitutional amendment.
Under the 22nd Amendment. On the side of the Democratic Party, you have the problem of what to do when you have a party which is sufficiently organized and strong across the nation that it can control both houses of Congress, and yet in the last two national campaigns has been unable to carry any state outside of the South or border states. And the fact also is to be noted that the Democratic Party is hardly representative of the grassroots political sentiment in that section of the country that it has been able to carry.
Yeah, that is the Deep South.
The Deep South.
Well, now, gentlemen, what are we to think of Mr. Eisenhower's role as the leader of the Republican Party in dealing with the Republican Party, minority as it is, in the Senate and in the House? He had personally selected at least three candidates, Mr. McKay, Mr. Langley, Mr. Thornton. He was thought to depend upon Senator Duff and Senator Bender of Pennsylvania and Ohio. All these gentlemen were defeated by Democrats. Now, to be sure, he won with victories were scored by Mr. Javits in New York and by John Sherman Cooper in Kentucky, and they, I suppose, are the kind of new Republican that Mr. Eisenhower has been talking about in his attempts to recreate and reshape his party.
I would say that most important in that group would be the two gentlemen from Kentucky, and being a Kentuckian, I'm a little proud to say this, that they stand out as more in the Eisenhower image than perhaps anyone else in the Senate today, that's Throughston Morton and John Sherman Cooper, and that they offer more opportunity for this kind of leadership than almost anybody that he can name on his side of the aisle in Congress.
Well, Mr. Harris, would you say that the old guard Republicans emerged from this election a stronger force within the Republican Party than they were last Monday?
Within Midwestern states, this is true. You had the overturning of a liberal Republican as governor of Iowa by a Democrat who's more conservative than he is.
Mr. Lovelace.
Mr. Lovelace upsetting Governor Hoyt.
Yes.
You had in Illinois Governor Stratton plagued by scandals in his administration, but still a more liberal Republican by all policy than the senatorial candidate, Senator Dirksen.
Yes, who won by a much larger margin.
Who won by a larger margin. I would say that this kind of thing happened throughout the Middle West, and it would indicate that as an organizational force, the Republican Party is perhaps at its low ebb, even though it did carry the presidency by the greatest majority in history.
Well, now, can we look for a continuing struggle inside the Republican Party between the kind of group that we can identify as volunteers for Eisenhower and the old Republican machines?
No, I would say that that struggle has passed its climax. And one of the reasons for the weakness of the Republican Party today is the sort of ending of that struggle, or the fatigue after it was over.
But you think Eisenhower has won on that
I think
level?
He has won, at least as of now. Now, of course, there will be a struggle about his successor. But I think that the peak of that struggle is over, so that now the question is whether or not the constructive work at putting together a legitimate political party can be carried on from the White House. Now, the difficulty in that seems to me to be the personality of the president himself.
Why?
Over the years, he has been a diplomat, a man who wanted to go ahead and let's rationalize conflicting views.
A coordinator.
In order to build his own party, he has to constantly draw the line between the executive policy, Eisenhower Republicanism, and the legislative policy, which is a moderate democracy, moderate Democrats. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not sure that he ever likes a fight enough to carry on this campaign to...
And to have a showdown.
Yes, so that he would be making public all the time a difference of philosophy.
Well, now let's ask Mr. Curry. Go ahead.
The suggestion that the Republican Party might be organized from the White House down strikes me as something on the order of a council of futility. When we are confronted with the fact that the Democratic Party, which has a strong local organization...
Massive party strength.
Has been unable in the last two elections to exert any great influence on the outcome of the presidential race. It seems to me that there is something of an anomaly in speaking of the desired organization in these terms.
Mr. Curry, before we go to that... let us ask you, sir, what you think the future of the Republican Party is in the South, realizing that Mr. Eisenhower 5 days ago carried Texas, Louisiana, Florida, Virginia, Tennessee, Oklahoma, and even West Virginia and Maryland. What is the future of the Republicans down there, sir?
Well, to answer that fully, one would have to be in position to interpret the result in the South in this last election, and I don't feel that I'm fully in position to do that. I would say, however, that it is beginning to be reasonably clear that a number of the southern states, and not simply border states, have become two-party states in the real sense.
I don't believe that at all.
Don't you?
I would say that there are two-party states every 4 years, just as I think the country has something of a division here between what it wants in the White House, which is often thought of as the Ike personality, but I think it runs deeper than that. And what it wants...
Let me ask you, do you think that any Republican other than Mr. Eisenhower could have won last Tuesday?
Yes, I do. I think almost any Republican who did not frighten voters could have won.
I define what you mean, sir, by saying frighten voters.
Well, by that I mean that I think the country said in the election of Eisenhower, we want a man who does not go around talking about problems. We do not want a man who seems as if he wants to expand the federal government and pester us. The country was really saying, sort of let us alone. Take care of external problems, yes. Maybe we'll have to worry about them, yes. But let's do as little worrying as possible.
A general mood and attitude of complacency, you're saying?
Yes, I would say that the Republican margin in the national election, in the presidential election, has been steadily rising since 1936, because of a recession in 1948, Harry Truman kept the line from crossing, the Republican line and the Democratic line. By the normal projection, the Republicans would have won with Dewey. But Dewey took this complacency too far in a year when there was economic trouble and people were not comfortable the way they were this year. Now, with the continuing prosperity and with this feeling of sort of pink prosperity around people, I think what they were really saying is don't bother us.
Do you mean particularly with respect to internal affairs?
Particularly with respect to internal affairs.
Because it seems to me that perhaps it is not a matter of grave concern at the moment if there is general complacency and disinclination to have activity from Washington, so long as you are concerned with the domestic scene alone. But the complacency you suggest when it relates to events in the world at large, it seems to me to be a rather dangerous suggestion.
I would agree to that.
And absolutely
that is
justified by events, yes.
Yes, I would agree to that, and I think it is the problem.
Well, I wonder if you're going so far as to suggest that the electorate enjoyed being soothed and told that there was nothing much to worry about on the international scene.
I would say this is a hazardous, this is a symptom that came out of the election, and I think it's a dangerous thing. Now, the question, it seems to me, is whether, with this air of sort of things are all right, we will be able to have the ardor, the interest, and the drive to support an effective foreign policy in the next 4 years.
Well, on that, let us go back to Mr. Curry's suggestion a moment ago that the Democratic Party faces severe problems of reorganization as a result of this election, as well as the Republican Party. What did you mean, Mr. Curry?
Well, I don't know that it's a problem that can be solved by organization. That was my point.
I would say it's a problem of policy, wouldn't you?
And leadership. Yeah. And the Democratic Party has organization. But that organization, effective as it has been at the state and local levels, has not influenced the national scene much, the presidential election much, in the last two elections. But the Democrats are always faced with some degree of threat of defection mm-hmm. from the states of the Deep South. Apparently they had avoided that threat this year because there was no formal states' rights movement and so on. But faced with the possible defection of the only section which has supported the Democratic Party on the presidential level for the last two election years, it seems to me that what the Democratic Party needs is not more organization, unless that's possible on the national level, which is quite difficult in the year when they are out of office, but is a more appealing program, shall we say, a more captivating program, and perhaps you might say a more aggressive leadership.
Well, it's easy for us sitting here as sort of armchair commentators who've been talking with politicians who worked their heads off lately and have been in the thick of this fight. But it seems to me that what you're saying, Mr. Curry, goes on to add up that the Republican problem is one of organization. The Democratic Party's problem is one of policy. And on the policy level, they've had their platform completely stolen by the Republicans, and they have not been able to make hay with an expanded Democratic Party, by the Democratic program. By
that,
the
idea of expanding, yes.
I mean extending welfare services, mm-hmm. plenty of Stevenson's proposal for rigid price supports, mm-hmm. and more and broader federal action.
Schools, mental health.
This didn't go down. People mm-hmm. didn't want it. They didn't want to be troubled with it.
Mm-hmm.
So the next question comes is, well, where does this People's Party, and the Republican Party has continued, the Democratic Party has continued to reflect the sort of
aspirations of the
aspirations mm-hmm. of some of the the less successful elements mm-hmm. of the society, as well as many others.
And this is a party that today controls 28 or 29 states.
Precisely. And at the same time, it's a party which lacks, on the national level, a clear distinction between itself and the administration.
Wouldn't you say that there are two observations that might be made? In the first place, more and more, the Democrats look not like a party, but like a coalition. If one thinks of what the Democratic organization is in, say, Alabama and Mississippi, or in Minnesota. Actually, if we were to think of a map of this country, we would see Democrats controlling the whole strip of our land west of the Mississippi, from the Canadian border to the Gulf of Mexico.
You mean just a tier of states?
Yes.
West of the Mississippi.
Yes, I mean Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, Arkansas, and Louisiana.
Yes, and all of those are states which have economic problems, largely the farm problem and drought, so that the Democratic Party continues to hold its strength and increase it.
But surely there's a decisive difference between a Democrat in Louisiana and the Democrat in Minnesota, and it's this difference which makes it so difficult to create the kind of national policy that Mr. Curry has been asking for.
I wouldn't agree to that, Mr. Donahue, in this sense. I would say that the Democratic Party has always been in a coalition in the sense that you mean it, and that perhaps only in its defeat do you notice that coalition having its problems. That perhaps as much as any time in the past, the Democratic Party represents an attitude toward government, a kind of a warm, good feeling about many things.
Yes, but you see, we in the North tend to think of the Democrats as being more liberal or perhaps more radical than the Republicans in search for solution of social questions. But the official Democratic hierarchy, the leaders who come from the South, who will be negotiating with Mr. Eisenhower, who will be in command of the important committees, these gentlemen are certainly as conservative as their Republican opposite numbers.
This has been true for 12 years, though. This is not a new phenomenon. And what it seems to me is the real question on that is not that the Democrats show that they are a coalition, as they have been for some time, but the question of how this Democratic attitude shapes itself into a policy which represents something that the whole nation is interested in. And at this moment, I think that attitude has been captured by the Republicans on a national level. This is what I mean by saying that I don't think Mr. Eisenhower's personality is the final thing in this election. It's tremendously important.
Well, this
I think
means,
he would
Mr.
have won
Harris.
Otherwise.
Yes, but Mr. Harris, this means, as you have pointed out elsewhere, that a million people in Ohio had to make a decision that they were for Eisenhower and for Losi. That 600,000 people in Pennsylvania had to make a similar distinction between a Democrat on the local level and the Republican for a top job.
Which itself is a startling thing, that many people would learn how to split their ticket. This is a tremendous surprise, it seems to me.
Beyond the fact that those people learned how to split their tickets, there's the fact that the local organizations somehow permitted the ticket splitting to take place. And this, it seems to me, is one of the fundamental factors in the campaign. It reflects, to my mind, a degree of unconcern on the part of organized political groups at the local level.
Even organized Democrats.
Yes. Well, but perhaps it also says something that's been obvious about the difference between politics today and politics 20 years ago. In Ohio is the perfect place to show it. In Ohio, Eisenhower reached past the political organization, which was not effective, and to the voters to get them to vote for him. Lausche, who has been an insurgent all the time within his party, has run his own life, and even though he sort of cuddled up to the Democratic Party during this campaign, Lausche won as Lausche. In both cases, these men used the mass media to reach past the organization and directly to the voters. In the long run, this sort of last hurrah of this election, it may be as important as anything we're talking about.
Well, what this seems to mean is the simple fact that political organizations thrive on patronage, and that at least since the beginning of the New Deal, with the growth of the civil service system and the growth of federal welfare programs, patronage at the level of the federal presidency has not been a very important factor.
Well, I think it maybe means more than that. I'd agree that patronage as a force has declined, although it's and that today the governor's office has much more patronage than the president's office in any given state.
Yes.
In any state.
I'm simply suggesting that this may be a reason why a strong local political organizations were unable to prevent the wholesale ticket splitting that obviously took place in this election.
Actually, of the 41 states that Mr. Eisenhower carried, 19 of those states elected either a senator or a governor who was a Democrat.
Yes, but at the same time, you have to say, and this question of what political organization means, is that the old line political machine depended upon an uninformed electorate who would go along with a straight ticket as told them by the precinct captain. This is no longer true. I'm not sure it's good that it's not true, but it's not true now. And people, including literally thousands of new migrants from the South and new immigrants from Europe, split their tickets in this election saying, I'm for this man and for this man. I am not riding along with the party. Now, I'm not sure this is good. The general assumption is the word independent is a great thing. I seriously doubt.
It might well threaten our entire two-party base if this were...
It threatens it as it stands today, and so some other way of approaching this thing has to be brought along. Now, I think that approach, as it stands today, has to be in terms of policy, represented by the Democratic Party and by the Republican Party. And what I'm saying about Eisenhower is that he cuts an image of what his version of the party is.
There's a man above party, almost.
Well, that...
Or don't you agree with that, Mr. Harris? You don't, do you?
Perhaps that's part of it, but I think it's also something other than just this personality of a man above party. He also represented the kind of policy which people wanted. And any man who did not contradict that kind of policy could have been elected in running in Eisenhower's shoes.
Now, it is now time to say that this morning we have been discussing a recent election of Mr. T. George Harris and Professor Bernard Curry. This is Maurice F. X. Donahue at the University of Chicago, returning you now to Monitor and Radio Central.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll look forward to monitoring you again next week. And in closing this subject for another 4 years at least, may I repeat some of the words from one who lost. Quote, what unites us is deeper than what divides us. Love of freedom, love of justice, and love of peace, unquote. We continue in just a moment. You're on the Monitor Beacon. Take one. Brief but important word from an old friend of ours, Mindy Carson.
Hello, everybody. This is Mindy Carson. You know, I believe that the cold, hard facts of life are sometimes not easy to take. But they're facts, and I guess they must be accepted. Now, take the facts about diabetes. This ailment ranks 7th among the known causes of death by disease. Diabetes is on the increase. At least 65,000 new cases each year. It's also a fact that about 1 million Americans have diabetes and don't even know it. That's the grimmest fact of all. Why? Well, because diabetes can be controlled. There is a way to lick the facts about diabetes. You may be one of the 1 million people of American Diabetes Association is looking for. A simple, easy test can detect diabetes early. You can ensure your future by taking that test today. This is Diabetes Week. Visit your family doctor or your local Diabetes Association or Medical Society.